Thank you. Again, thank you all for attending and listening. I hope I'll be straight to the cut and not use all 25 minutes, okay? So the title of the paper is What Influences the Implementation of I4S for SMEs, the Brazilian Case. It's co-authored with a friend, Flav Zeliton, and also Fabio. Fabio is also in the talk with us. So you can defer all the difficult questions to him. I'm just kidding. Right, okay. So what's our goal in the motivation in this paper? We investigate the factors that inhibit the implementation of I4S for SMEs by firms of a large economy, namely Brazil. And why we do that, SMEs account for approximately 99% of global enterprises, generate around 70% of jobs, and are responsible for around 33% of the GDP in emerging economies. However, the literature on I4S for SME is lacking at least three avenues. The literature is lacking on empirical studies on SMEs users' needs, that is lacking on challenges that have prevented implementation by SMEs. And in this context, emerging economies are misrepresented in the international setting. So another issue that comes to the fore is that several countries mandate implementation of I4S for SMEs, but there is little evidence of the benefits of the implementation, and it could have significant different implications in less developed economies. So our setting, the accounting model for SMEs at the global level was kind of like arbitrary, prior literature finds. A decision was taken without proper evidence of their benefits. The evidence that says that smaller business can be deeply affected by rules that are too complex. Practitioners had little participation on the standard for SMEs. Maybe that relates to what Tadeu was explaining in two presentations before, right? That maybe they don't participate, they don't send comment letters. So I mean, it's hard for the standard setter as well. In Brazil, I4S for SMEs has been adopted since 2010, but they are mandatory on paper. But in Brazil, we unfortunately have a low enforcement, and also there's absence of sanctions. So it's mandatory, but if the firm doesn't comply, there's no sanctions. So that may lead to non-compliance as well. And one aspect of this setting of Brazil is that as there is absence of sanctions, so even if you don't comply, you won't be penalized, then the cost of non-compliance is low. It's kind of like almost like if the firms that adopted, although it's mandatory, it's kind of like it being discretionary or voluntary, really. So maybe the adopters that really adopt the I4S for SMEs may have seen benefits because those were greatest, then the cost of adoption is low in that sense. So what is our contribution and implication? So mainly we're investigating the difficulties and the inhibiting factors in large emerging market setting. We want to point out the research in emerging markets explores the different national institutional settings, such as lower levels of enforcement of accounting standards and high corruption. And we find in this paper, and I'm going to go through the findings with you, is that the lack of training of the standard is the leading factor, at least in Brazil, for not adopting the I4S for SMEs. And as weird as it sounds, we find that the absence of sanctions is not an important factor behind no implementation. So a clear implication is that the IASB should work more closely with national regulators on implementing the standard effectively, concerning training and disseminating the standard for current and future practitioners. So what are our propositions? We have two. The first proposition relates to the complexity of I4S for SMEs that's been documented in prior literature. Some studies find that the scope and the application can be overly complicated. They standard demand guidance, illustrative examples. So our first proposition is that structural and practical issues of the I4S for SMEs inhibit its implementation in Brazil. The second point we focus on is the absence of sanctions, because basically in Brazil, it's a little bit of a unique setting in that sense. If you don't comply, you don't be penalized. So we posit that the absence of sanctions will be a main factor that inhibits its implementation. So we mainly have these two propositions. So what's the method that we do? We do a questionnaire, okay? In order to not incur in all the costs of validating the questionnaire, we use a questionnaire that was used by Ashand et al., published at the Australian Country Review. We do small modification with that questionnaire. So we have several questions, several filter questions to try to really filter the ideal respondent for our research. Then we have some demographic questions about geographic location, the level of education, whether the organization that he or she works for has implemented IFRS for SMEs, whether they have an internal accounting department, whether they have been participating in continued training, and different from Chand et al., we just drop question 23 because that's regarding to tax benefits that not applied in Brazil. And we add one question regarding the absence of sanctions to test hypothesis H2. One other reason we adopted Chand et al.'s questionnaire, again, to not incurring the cost of validating, is also to be compared with a prior literature. So we can see, we can compare really the issues across several countries. So we had a professional translation that converted the original questions to Brazilian Portuguese, and the second one switched back to English. So we did the reverse translation to assess that maintains the original meaning of the questionnaire. We reached our sample by a hand-collected list of users from the Brazilian Federal Council of Accountants. So that list contained accountants and accounting firms from all over the country. We sent a link of the questionnaire via email, WhatsApp messaging, and LinkedIn. And we also tried to leverage the distribution using the snowball method, where the respondents indicate new respondents. So we had a little over 800 responses, but then after filtering these respondents, we reached 426 valid responses. And that includes from accountants, directors, and other senior staff involved in the process of reporting according to IFRS for SMEs. So our main model is the dependent variable is basically whether the firm does not implement IFRS for SMEs, okay? So it's one, whether for non-implementation. Then we have several variables like costs, inconsistencies, inaccuracies, comprehensibility, guidance, complexity, sanctions, on-premise, and training. So mainly these variables are calculated as the average of the Likert, seven scale Likert point, seven point Likert scale based on the questionnaire of Chand et al. 2015. And we have these sanctions here to test proposition two. So the idea here is to think about whether, you know, what drives non-implementation? Is it the cost? Is it inconsistency? Is it inaccuracy? Is it comprehensibility? So we try to see whether any of those variables are significant in explaining non-implementation for IFRS or SMEs. So going to our results, we validate those 426, as I told you, from 825 respondents. You can see that we have a good balance between the respondents' knowledge, like 881 are basic, they have only basic knowledge about the standard, 159 are intermediate knowledge, and only 86 are advanced. Mostly all of them completed higher education. And according to the positions, we have analysts, accountants, managers, controller, directors, partners, and owners. So in order to better understand what's going on with the sample, we also partitioned these positions in two components, the managerial positions and the non-managerial positions. So non-managerial will be analysts and accountants, whereas managerial positions will be manager, controller, director, partner, and owner. And one important stuff to mention here is that although the sample is by convenience, right, we have this list and then we send it out, so we cannot guarantee randomness and generability of the results. But then if we compare the geographical distribution of the respondents that you have here with the list from, with like the official figures from the Federal Council of Brazil, you can see that more or less it gives a little bit of balance between the respondents. So it seems a good sample to answer our research question. And we get a little over 384. So we have 95% confidence interval level with more or less 5% of a margin of error. So we conducted several univariate tests and analysis. In the presentation, only focus on the main ones, okay? That ones that provide the conclusive results so you guys can follow. So this is basically our main table. Dependent variable here is no implementation, okay? And then I'll go through each column at once. So what happened here is we look at the 426 responses. And what we find is that inconsistencies and incomprehensibility seems to foster no implementation. So that may lead us to think that, hey, it seems that the standard is complex and people are not following, are not adopting it, or not implementing because of these two factors. Then we can also see that inaccuracies and lack of guidance, they actually foster implementation. So it seems like the higher the discretionality that the accountants have, they are more likely to adopt the standard. These are the initial results. Then what we do is we separate the sample between no managerial positions and managerial positions. Okay. And we can see that for the no managerial positions, the results are basically the same. But then if you look at the managerial positions, then they are gone. And it's likely that managerial positions have a higher training than those in the non-managerial positions. So we start thinking about whether training would be the factor between this, like basically the knowledge of the standard is related to the training and how much they know about the standard. So it seems like they are missing out to implement the standard based on maybe a fear, not knowledge, or basically I don't have enough training or knowledge about the standard. But once they really implement and they have the more knowledge about the standard, then they don't see inconsistencies or inaccuracies or incomprehensibility at all in the standard. And you can see that the sample is kind of like evenly distributed for these two analyses. 235 for no implement for no managerial positions, 191 for managerial positions. Then we conduct other analysis, which is we define whether the not advantage knowledge will be as the dependent variable. So if you are you have basic or intermediary knowledge, it'll be one, otherwise zero. And then what we find is that incomprehensibility increases based on the level of based on the lack of knowledge, basically. So it seems that our results are driven by the lack of knowledge rather than saying that, hey, the participants feel that the standard is really incomprehensive or inconsistent. So it seems that once they adopt, they get to know the standard, they have knowledge about the standard, then they have more training, right? That's another thing that we find. Training is always negative and significant, meaning that the higher training, less likely the respondents are to not implement the standard. It's written in the other way, but I think you get the point, right? Column five is also a different analysis we did with knowledge, but it also leads to the same conclusion. Like lower knowledge thinks that the standard is incomprehensible. The other test we did is basically we test the different scenario views of those that have advanced knowledge and intermediate knowledge. So in this regression, we have the probability of not implementation IFRS for SME is one, and then we regress on intermediate knowledge and advanced knowledge. So you can see that intermediate knowledge is negative, advanced knowledge is negative. So more advanced knowledge basically leads for not implementing the standard. So written in another way, if you have an advanced knowledge, you will implement the standard, the more likely you are to implement the standard. And we test whether these views are significantly different, and we find that they are. Like advanced knowledge has a different perception than the intermediate. Okay. That's mainly our main results. And then I apologize to Rin, I don't know whether she got in contact with this, but we submitted an extra analysis, an extra piece of work to the reviewers. Okay, so I apologize if you don't have contact with that. But what we did is, like, this is not yet in the paper and we're considering to include in the final version, depending on the referees and the editors. But what we did was we interviewed two senior accountants and audited partners who provide training, consulting, and audit service to SMEs as an additional cross-check. So we wanted to validate and triangulate what we find in the from the respondents' quantitative results. And we conducted a semi-structured interview. So the main findings of these interviews are, like, many of the issues related to the incomprehensibility seem related to the need for judgment and discretion. So they say managers are better able to understand how to make a judgment to represent the economic essence of transactions. No managers, such as accountants and analysts, are used to following strict rules with no need to make subjective decisions. That mainly relates on how they were training, because they only perform tax accounting. Terms that reflect the need for judgment and distraction, like maximum extent possible, reliable measurement, highly probable, and significant risk, cause more confusion. And parts of the standard that can be more difficult to understand refer to items that are rarely used by smaller firms, such as financial instruments, derivatives, current translations, fair value, and other related terms like debt instrument, hedge, and swap. Then regarding training, what they told us is, like, many firms do not see it as necessary, which is a little bit striking. Many times managers refuse to pay for the training of the firm's accounting staff, and often staff pays for courses out of their own pockets. And one of the inferences that we could take out from the interview is that there's a generalized problem with accountants training in Brazil. They still receive training to follow strict rules and predefined tables, not making judgments and decisions. One famous rule of thumb that they quote is allocating 3% of accounts receivable as doubtful debts, regardless of the risk profiles of different customers have. And they also pointed out that accounting bodies like the State Accounting Councils and the Federal Accounting Council usually do not offer IFRS for SME courses. Although most firms are SMEs, IFRS for SMEs training in higher education is deficient. And accountants, especially the older ones, will have the training concepts such as discount rates and present value. So after knowing the standard or having implemented it, the inference that we get is that implementers start seeing its benefits. They have access to cheaper loans, and statements audited by a chartered auditor. They have also access to statements adequately audited by a chartered auditor, receipts with the Brazilian Securities Commission and the Brazilian Institute of Independent Auditors. So these main findings from the interview support our view that the lack of knowledge about the standard is a major issue regarding its implementation. It seems that IFRS for SME standard has a level of detail and complexity adequate for SMEs, given that the most complicated issues are not used by the smaller firms, only to larger firms. So our main conclusion in this paper is that increased knowledge training basically reduces the probability of no implementation. So taking it the other way, the higher the knowledge, more likely it's that the respondents are to, more likely the respondents are likely to implement the standard. So we provide a better understanding of how accounting professionals perceive IFRS for SMEs in Brazil. And we argue that the ISB should weigh in strategies to promote courses jointly with local regulators. So that's all from me. Thank you.
Thank you, Andre, for this very informative presentation and for keeping well within the time. Now we'll hear from Anne, who will provide the academic discussion. And Anne, you have 10 minutes.
Yeah, thank you. I will try to upload the slides again, and I hope they don't disappear in the middle of the presentation. Can you see the slides?
Yes.
Okay, yes. Thank you. So, André, thank you for the presentation. Very interesting research results. So what was the purpose of this presentation? Well, to increase the evidence on the challenges that exist to implement IFRS for SMEs in emerging economies. The authors, they use a single country study, Brazil, and the characteristics of the environment or the context in which the study is conducted is that the environment is characterized by a very low level of enforcement. Data is collected through a survey sent to accountants and accounting firms, and the main conclusion is that the biggest challenge for implementing IFRS for SMEs in Brazil is not the complexity of the standard, but the level of education. So I have read the paper with great interest, and I have a number of comments, but these comments are suggestions which you can use if you rewrite a paper. So first of all, looking at the country context, because there is a low degree of enforcement, in fact, the adoption of IFRS for SMEs by Brazilian companies resembles to the type of a voluntary adoption of IFRS for SMEs. And from the literature, we know that in case of a voluntary adoption, firm-level incentives are very important to make firms decide on the implementation of IFRS. And knowing that probably in the Brazilian context and that firm-level incentives are very important, I was wondering whether their firms don't adopt IFRS for SMEs because of certain incentives, for example, to get access to credits. And as a result of that decision at the firm level, accountants involved have to become more knowledgeable. So strictly speaking, from an academic perspective, it could be that there is some endogeneity going on in your data, and that the implementation of IFRS and the knowledge that accountants or people involved need to have, that there is simultaneity, and that these variables are driven by an exogenous firm level incentive. So that in your models, you capture associations, but not really causality. So I think that's important to stress here. Then a second point I had, and maybe it's my own misreading of the paper, but the thing I was struggling with is who really answered the survey. Often you cite a survey sent to accountants and accounting firms. We've had responses from accountants, directors, other senior staff. And then you also mentioned the present paper contributes to a better understanding of how accounting professionals perceive IFRS. Am I correct in understanding that you thought that in the respondents then, we end up with accountants working in firms as internal accountants, and that you also have, as in your respondent population, external accountants being part of accounting firms? If that is the case, there is some opportunity, I think, in your data for additional analysis, and that you could make a distinction between these two groups. Respondents working internally in a normal company, I would say, and respondents from an accounting firm. Because the classifications you use in the paper, you have a category partner owner. Does it include partners in accounting firms, but also owners of companies? And these two groups, if they're mixed, yeah, they have different backgrounds, and maybe it's better to separate them. For example, also the category accountants, does it include both external accountants working in an accounting firm, as well as the internal accountant working in a firm and preparing financial statements for the firm? Also, the managerial, non-managerial distinction. So you present the classification of who's managerial and who's non-managerial, but maybe the reasoning behind that classification would be useful to have. Because, for example, a controller, I would think he's non-managerial because it's usually a staff function. And more information on the classification would also better help to understand the results of your model 2 and 3 in table 6. because what we see there is that the managerial positions have less problems with the standards themselves than the non-managerial positions. And in the non-managerial positions, the accountants are included. So that was, in fact, puzzling me to a certain extent. Then this is an element of clarification. So you've submitted us the survey, which is in English. I was wondering if in the survey, which was, of course, in the Portuguese language, whether you referred specifically to IFRS for SMEs or to this, I won't pronounce it, this Brazilian name for the standards. Because in our interviews, we noticed that even knowledgeable persons in a country often do not distinguish between IFRS for SMEs and the national standards if IFRS for SMEs is included in those national accounting standards. I was also wondering the self-assessment of the knowledge level, whether in the survey you indicated some elements by which a respondent could know if he or she had basic information, basic knowledge or intermediate knowledge. Because advanced knowledge is a category I think that people can easily distinguish, but it might be that the distinction between basic and intermediate knowledge, yeah, might be more difficult to grasp for respondents. Then another suggestion I have, so probably respondents, when they filled in the survey, they might have had some size of companies in mind. And I was wondering if you have data on that. For example, the internal accountants, when they answered the survey, if you were able to catch for which type of size they answer the survey. Because there might be a difference whether it's a very small company or whether it's a medium-sized company they are employed in. So if it would be possible to distinguish between sizes of firms and relate people employed, might be useful. I think what you also have to assume is that those people that filled in the survey, if they think of implementation, they think of a real adoption and not a label adoption. So that's also quite important to mention. Then just two statistical suggestions, because you have a high correlations between the independent variables. Did you check with various inflation factor for multicollinearity? And in fact, for your constructs inconsistency and accuracy, you have a multi-item measurement because you have many questions. You mentioned that you will not do a principal component analysis because you lose the detail of the information. But I was wondering if you checked with other statistical techniques whether these constructs in the minds of the people really loaded on different items. So if they were able to distinguish between inconsistencies and inaccuracies and these constructs. Then this is the last suggestion I have. It's with respect to the literature review. I think it would be useful when you reflect on studies that have investigated the usefulness of IFRS for SMEs. That it's important to make a distinction between studies conducted in countries where there is another set of financial reporting that is embedded in the country and also provides useful information. Like in the EU, we have the private firm reporting that is guided by EU directives. Australia also had a system. So I think the findings for countries like EU, Australia, UK might not be immediately transposable to findings for emerging countries where the local gap that existed was much less developed than, for example, in the EU or Australia. So I think these are my main suggestions for the paper. I wish you good luck with this research and success with further publication efforts.
Thank you very much, Anne. This was a great discussion. And I would like to invite Tadeu. Tadeu is becoming a seasoned participant at the research forum in discussing the papers, and being Brazilian himself, I'm sure he'll have a lot of insights to offer.
Yes, thank you very much, Anna. Well, first of all, thank you, Andrea, and the other authors for the paper. This study does provide insights on the application of IFRS for SMEs in a specific developing country economy, in this case, specifically Brazil. Especially in this case, it is a major economy. I mean, that is something to take into consideration. It's not just an emerging economy, but it's a big one. This is something that we as standard setters, not only we, but all standard setters are interested in getting evidence about the use of the standard around the world. There were 426 questionnaires applied. It's a huge work, and it provides a robust basis for your study and for us, although I have a comment on the questions that I will mention later. You mentioned further investigation indicates that once participants know the standard, implementation are mitigated. I select this sentence from your abstract because I think this is an important statement and provides a very meaningful information and is all related to your final findings, specifically in relation to education. You also mentioned that developing countries are misrepresented in the international settings. Here, I just want to take the opportunity to say something you are aware because you mentioned that, but I think that you could include in your literature review when especially this point comes up to counterpoint that one. The ISP has a consultative group that is the EEG, Emerging Economy Group, and then we discuss a lot of IFRS for SME in this group. And also we have, and you mentioned that one, the SME Implementation Group, or SMIG, which majority is formed by developing countries. Most of the economies that we have this concern that we have the representatives of countries applying IFRS for SMEs in this group. Today we have 7 representatives from Latin America, and from those, 2 are from Brazil. And then I think that we get enough feedback from them in this regard. At the same time, many of your references are very up to date. I'm glad about that. It is very positive. Many people in the foundation will be feel famous for being mentioned in your papers. And in relation to practitioners, we also made specific outreach to address this one. We have some one-to-one. We did something, and I know you have why you have selected that one. Many of these financial statements are actually prepared by accounting, smaller and medium accounting firms. And then I think that these are also an important population when we are discussing the difficulties in implementing IFRS for SME. You said that in your research, complements IFRS request for the information, our RFI, and also the meeting and discussion with our implementation group in our comprehensive review. We appreciate that, although some details that could help us further in several ways might be hidden in the responses, and I'm wondering whether you can bring some more details to the paper, if possible. Although it is not the main point in your study, but as you said, some of the insights from the questions probably might be very helpful. Okay, there are engagement challenges with users not participating in the due process. Again, I would appreciate if you can complement this reference in your literature review to incorporate what I said in the previous session. And you, as you mentioned that one, most of you can get from the staff paper, just an example, the surveys, including outreach direct with users, and then therefore we do have some collaboration in this case. You mentioned the scarce resources, corruption, it's always sad to listen to that. But again, this is an important reference in your study, and based on other studies, it seems to highlight some common problems, and I think you touched on one of the solutions to this problem, which is educational process, but it should go beyond and involve many, refer to the involvement of many other stakeholders, including United Nations. Absence of sanctions for non-implementation, even though it is mandatory. I believe the main sanction is related to the main benefit. They would have less access to resources. This could be part of an additional study, not this one, but how more difficult is for those non-compliant companies to raise capital compared with those that have implemented IFRS for SME and have this available and sometimes audited. One point interesting, I think the filter you applied itself, it's a very rich information. The one that you have disregarded, it's important indirect finding in your study. I really appreciate that. Here, the first statement, the barrier to implement IFRS does not seem to be standard per se, but a lack of knowledge about it. I'm very glad about the sentence. I really like it, although we know we still have a lot to do. The questionnaire are drawn that you have applied are drawn for a prior study, so evidence can be compared between these studies. This is something that is important as well. Although countries might have different characteristics, the results and comparison should be made with caution beyond the modifications that you have already made. One point we noted is that some questions were framed in the negative, and just putting myself as the respondent shoes, I think it might interfere in the quality of the response. I think that's something that I'm not sure exactly whether you can refer to this one, but it's really, when I check the questionnaire, it comes to my mind here. Also, information about the profile of those responding. I think that it was also mentioned by Anne. For example, whether a country is outsourced, prepared internally, may interfere in the knowledge or educational conclusion. One thing that I just would like to, that I did not see in your studies in relation to the continuing education in the country. I think that sometimes you touch on this one, the importance of this one, but I think that it would be important if you can include the level of educational continuing education, what is required in the country, because it helps to assess how much of this is already offered. And as you said, as a contribution to our work, when you mentioned that we should do more in terms of training and et cetera, again, if you just go to our website, there are a lot of very good educational material for each module, each section of SME, but many people are not actually aware of this material, but it's a very rich material. But I just think that we can, I think that refer in the study, local continuing education, what is available and what could be done additionally. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Tadeu. A lot of things for the authors to take away from your discussion. So I would invite Andre to respond to the comments made by Anne and Tadeu. And then also I would like to again ask you, the participants, if they have any questions or comments, to put them in the chat box. Over to you, Andre.
Sure, thank you very much. Thank you, Anne. Thank you, Tadeu, for the very enlightening discussions. I'm going to try to touch every point, okay, but not sure if I'll be able to, but let's see. So let me start in the order, right? So talking about Anne's point, Anne touched a delicate point about endogeneity. I need to think about it, but just my initial thought is there may be some endogeneity there, but the outcome will be the same and the may not dismiss our results. But I need to think a little bit more clearly about that, okay, and whether we could do anything else. One of the reasons we conducted the interview, and I know it's not in the paper yet, but I presented some of the results, and you can also relate to the findings of the paper for IFRS for SMEs in Sri Lanka, and also your own paper. It kind of like resonates to our finding, relates to the training, right, in different countries. And your country included Brazil as well, if I remember correctly. So it seems to be in the same line of results. Discussing about internal versus external, I think we do have a filter, that's question 8. So we're definitely going to look at that, separating internal accountants versus external, okay? That will be helpful to see. I think we need to better clarify some of the terms, because owner, I need to check that, but owner, when we refer to owner slash partner, we're talking about owner of the accounting firms, not the owner of the firm itself, you know? So it could be a partner of the accountant, but it could also be the owner. As Tadeu was saying, many of the terms, the accounting is done by small accountancy firms, and the one who responds could be a partner or the owner of that firm, that accounting firm specifically, not the firm itself. That's what we're talking about, so we definitely need more clarification. About the segregation between basic and intermediate knowledge, no, we didn't do like a questionnaire, you know, to filter and assess whether the respondent had a basic or an intermediate knowledge. What we did is we asked them to basically indicate the, how can you say, their degree, okay? So whether they completed a degree or not. And then we have like a technical degree, whether they completed like a incomplete higher education, or they have a complete higher education, that means, you know, completed undergraduate course, right? And or they are not trained at all in accounting. So that was kind of like our filter. Between size of firms, the analysis between size of firms, I don't think we have that data. We do have between internal and external, so we're definitely going to have a look at that. And talking about the validity of the questionnaire, that's one of the questions that they also asked us about. Yeah, I think we did the Kronberg Alpha in the past, but we didn't mention in the text. I need to go back and check that. But one of the main reasons we didn't is because the questionnaire was used by prior research and validated by prior research. And I do agree with Tadeu that, you know, the questions could be more neutral. But, you know, we refrain ourselves from developing a new questionnaire and having to validate all that. And, you know, other questions would be, oh, but, you know, you refrain the questions in a different way, so it's not comparable to prior research. So, you know, there's always a trade-off about this, right? But I agree that the questions could be more neutral. And because of that, we conduct the other analysis separating the groups, and we do a little bit more according to Anne's suggestion. And we also did the interview kind of like to triangulate and see whether, you know, is that really what we are finding or not. So I think we should include the interview in the paper as well. I hope I covered all points from Anne. Tadeu, thank you very much for the discussion as well. We're definitely going to include a discussion about the EEG, right, the Emerging Economy Group, and discuss about, you know, some of the points that we relate to, that, you know, these users, they don't participate, and we kind of like need to talk a little bit more about the institutional setting in Brazil, and, you know, that these users should also refer to the AASB for, you know, comments and basically participate in the discussion. I agree that, you know, one interesting avenue there, and it's kind of like what Anne tried to tackle with her research, is about discussing how difficult it is for non-implementers to assess credits compared to implementers, right? We have very small evidence about that in the interview. The interviewees told us that once they implement the standard and they can be audited, then usually they assess cheaper loans, okay? But, you know, again, it's from an interview, maybe it could be, you know, explored in more in depth in additional research. And we will mention about the continuing education, because we do have a question about that in the questionnaire, so make sure to make some analysis and compare to what is the requirement of the country and how that relates to what we find. But you know, although I regret to say this, you know, the expectation is that will be, you know, below the requirement, right? But anyway, let's see. I think that's all. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Andre. Anne Tarka would like to ask a question. Anne, do you want to unmute?
Thanks, Anna. Thanks very much to the authors. So my question is to the authors of any of the three papers, because this comes up for all the three papers, and that's the question about education and training. And in some of the papers, the comment's been that the professional bodies need to step up. So I think in the Sri Lanka paper that came up, and obviously with Andre in talking about Brazil, education's come up again. And so my question to any of the authors for any insights that they can share with the IASB, the IASB, as Tadio has pointed out, has got a lot of materials that have been specifically written and developed, a lot of effort for IFRS for SMEs, and that's on the website. So firstly, do we need to be doing more to disseminate knowledge about that resource? That's my first question. My second question, if the IASB was trying to encourage education within a particular jurisdiction, who else should we be trying to liaise with or talk to or encourage other than the professional bodies? Because it sounds to me like there needs to be encouragement of other institutions in a country. We're all saying auditors / chartered accountants, we're all saying it lies with them. And of course they're so important, but surely they need help. So who else, in thinking about the research, the countries you've been in, who else could the IASB be liaising with or working with? Or, is it regulators? Is it universities? What we find with our work is that in any country, there's a lot of institutions that are part of the institutional framework. So my question to authors is, do you have any suggestions for your own country or the countries you've been researching? Who else could we be working with to do something about this education/training? Thank you, Anna.
May I answer? And thank you very much for your question. So it kind of like relates to the last question of Tadeo, right? We know that the evidence is there. I mean, the material is there, right? It could be very well developed, but the problem it seems is it's kind of like a marketing job now, right? As you're saying. So the materials are there, and then you need better strategies to disseminate. Maybe you're right. It's not only with the accountancy bodies or the professional bodies, but one of the points that came across the interview was, the firms, the accountancy firms itself, they don't want to pay for the education of their own accountants, right? And maybe there's some work to be done in joint partnership from the IASB, the local professional bodies, in our case, the Federal Council of Accountants of Brazil, and those accountancy firms. It's kind of like, at least in Brazil, it's kind of like a barrier because, education and training is an area that we unfortunately lack in many areas. It's not only in accounting. So it's a little bit like of a cultural issue as well, but it also relates to the costs, right? So, everybody knows they need to be trained, but then if you're an accountant, then, unfortunately in Brazil, at least for this firm as well, when you're talking about SMEs, their pay is not really high, and it's become really tough to basically balance personal expenses with also educational training if the firms that the accounting firms that they work for, they don't are willing to contribute to that education. So maybe, a work around those partnership integrating those accountancy firms will be helpful. But that, again, I can only speak for Brazil. Hope it's helpful.
Yes, maybe I can add from the evidence we got through the interviews. We think an important partner are the regulators. And I recall especially the interview with Zimbabwe, where the bankers say, well, as long as the regulators don't really take IFRS for SMEs up seriously, nobody else in the country will. So backing of the regulators, I think, is quite important.
Thanks, Anne. Does Umesh, do you want to add something from Sri Lankan's point of view, or?
Thank you. I think possibly the regulators, I think they are important people. So in terms of policies they try and make. I think that's important. So maybe building good connection with the possibly the governance or whatever. I mean, the particular ministries we have would be helpful. No? I mean, if I speak from the Fijian context, I think the Ministry of Economy plays an important role. So possibly, yeah, they could help in that exercise. And recently, we have seen the Fijian government had actually revised the Fiji Institute of Accountants Act or something, and they were pretty concerned about few people kind of were only auditors, or, and then they were looking for more people to be qualified as practicing accountants or whatever. So those are some of the bottlenecks we have in developing countries. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you, Mesh. Fabio, you would like to add something?
Oh, yes. So I'm a co-author for Nandre. And something that came up on our interviews is that maybe you could also work on the demand side, like because we're talking here about a cheaper credit, basically, right? It would be like possibly the main benefit of IFRS for the SMEs. But then there's not really like a structured demand from banks to have these audited and under the standard financial statement. So what happens is, well, if you got like these financial statements that are audited, properly audited, then yeah, we trust you more and we're gonna give you better credit conditions. But if you don't, we're gonna give you credit anyway. So I don't know if I'll work from the demand side, not only telling people, oh, you know, you should do this or you should do that, but then the people that actually use it start demanding it. Maybe we could work with the demand side to show them, you know, if you start actually demanding this kind of information from these people, maybe you're gonna it's gonna be easier to even achieve targets like stability, Basel requirements, and all the stuff. And then it could be a channel that it's maybe we are just ignoring it.
Thank you, Fabio. Runita has her raised her hand. Runita.
Yeah, thank you. I was just going to add to the discussion on education as well. From the interviews and speaking to a wide range of bankers in different countries, the other impression I was getting in terms of education was that education about IFRS needs to go down to the grassroots level as well, apart from just talking about the regulators doing something in the country. I mean, that is one important point, but I think we need to get IFRS understanding at the grassroots level so that it can feed up as they move into the profession and then start working with IFRS wherever they end up with. So I think it is important that IFRS is fed into the education at the tertiary level as well, so that these graduates who are coming out are well versed with what the different standards are and how they are being, or how they should be actually used, the judgment that needs to be made. Because when we were talking to bankers, they were placing a lot of emphasis also on the knowledge the owners had about using how their financial statements were prepared and their knowledge on IFRS or IFRS for SMEs. And bankers would just basically dismiss any owner who comes in and say, oh, I have no idea about my financials, talk to my accountant. Some bankers were placing very less trust on the financials because they thought the owner is not involved. He doesn't know his financials, how his financials have been put together. Whereas when they were talking to some other owners and they were, you know, quite knowledgeable of different IFRSs, how they affect their financials, they were more engaging with those and, you know, trusting that they know how to conduct their business, surprisingly. So I think it needs to also come at the grassroots level so that, you know, there is a good understanding amongst the community as to how IFRS has to work. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. This was very informative to get the views from so many different countries.